Welcome to Middle Ground Radio with Pastor Nate Gallagher. We are taking some time to go through the book of Ephesians and discover the foundations of our faith. Here is Pastor Nate with today's message of our series, Start Again.
And I've titled this message, if you take notes, Walk in Love. That's what we're going to be talking about. Walk in love. All right, Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, and I'm going to read through verse 7. He writes this, therefore, everyone say, therefore. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and ready for it? And walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for. So Paul makes a statement. He says, walk in love. And then he gives us sort of the motivation or the behind the scenes of like, how, what does that even look like? He says, this is what it is. Walk in love as Christ also has loved us, and he's given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. Then he says, but fornication and all uncleanness and covetousness, let it not even be named among you as it is fitting for saints. Neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. Paul, in this text, he's showing us, when he tells us, he makes a statement, walk in love, and then he's showing us that relationship with God changes how we do relationship, and no longer are we getting our guidelines from the world or culture, but from God. Now, Paul's writing to the church there in Ephesus. Ephesus was a pagan or a secular or a non-Christian, very worldly culture that they were in. They had all sorts of temples set up to false gods that they would practice crazy, weird love relationships in the name of their false god that would happen, that was running rampant in this city of Ephesus. And so the Ephesians very easily and very quickly could get caught up in what culture was saying, what love was, and how you express it, and how you partake in it. And so Paul really wants them to know, he sort of calls a timeout, and he says, listen, this is love, and he tells us to walk in this real love, and he tells us that what they say or what the culture says love is not the standard. And he tells us specifically to imitate Christ as we attempt to walk in love. In other words, allow God to be your standard for love. And then we see in this text, really, he gives us a contrast in this text between what God says love is and then what culture or the world or the people around us that aren't following Jesus say that love is. And I kind of noticed on Valentine's Day, there's always like love quizzes that you can take. You know what I mean? There's like little love quizzes, like, are you in love? Or whatever it might be. Or the will you be my Valentine quiz? So this is going to be kind of our love like God loves type of quiz. The first thing that he tells us that we need to understand in contrast between God's way and the world is that we're called to love, not lust. Love, not lust. One of the things Paul does for us is show us the difference between love and lust, which is something in our culture and in our world we confuse all the time. We confuse them all the time because I think the symptoms, for lack of a better word, of love and the symptoms, for lack of a better word, for lust can kind of like the signals can get crossed a little bit. And what culture and the media and maybe even the celebrities we follow on Instagram or the movies or whatever it is says like this is how you behave when you're in love. But in reality, how they're behaving looks a lot more like lust than it does love. And so Paul wants us to understand, hey, walk in love. And then he explains to us, this is what love looks like, and this is not love. And the first thing I think that we need to understand between the two is that love gives and lust takes. Love gives and lust, or another, The idea of lust is not an actual action, but more of an emotion. It's a desire. The word lust, as it's used in the Bible, sometimes it's not even used in a bad way, but it can be a bad way. But it's just this deep desire towards something. And love gives, but lust takes. Paul's example and aim for us when it comes to love is the example Jesus set. He says, walk in love, and then he defines it. He says, as Christ also has loved us, and then here's the key, given himself for us. That's his idea of love. That Christ, he loved us so much that he gave. We know the most famous verse in all the Bible, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he what? Gave his only son, because real love, actual love, gives way more than it takes. I think a lot of times if we're gauging, like, are we in love? Do we like somebody? What is this? But we often think, well, what do I get from them? Well, they make me feel good, and I feel special when I'm around them, and I don't care about anybody else in the world when I'm around them, and all of these things. And it's just about, it's about me. It's about what am I getting from this? Or they always buy me the best Valentine's Day card, and they're just, it's always about me. Or maybe in the other sense, it's if you're in a relationship with somebody that it's all about them, you'll find that real love is willing to give, but lust just looks to take. It's just about me. It's about what can I receive? What can I? And oftentimes, you'll find that people will do things that are against you, that are not for your best interests, because they say it's love, but in reality it's lust, and they're taking from you, that they're just trying to get what they think they need or that what they think feels right, and they're putting you down. They're not concerned with your feelings because it's not love, it's lust, because love gives, lust takes. Second thing is that I think is a good comparison or contrast is that love doesn't need a reason, but lust does. Love doesn't need a reason. Lust sort of keeps score and gets even. Like, you do something nice, so like, okay, I got to return the favor. Like, you got me this card, so all right, I got to get you this card. Like, Hannah texted me yesterday, and she said, we're going away this or on Sunday for like our anniversary trip, and she texted me yesterday and said, don't you get me anything tomorrow. And she said, if you do, I will return it. Make me a coffee in the morning and nothing else or I'll return it. And then I woke up this morning and she had got me a card. And I was like, what? That's not fair. You told me very specifically, like, do not get me anything. And so I obeyed. I made her coffee and that was it. So then I felt like, not really, this is because I love her, but I felt like I got to do something. So I had to go get her flowers. You know what I mean? Like, we said we weren't going to do anything. And then you did something. Like, this idea of like check. I'm just kidding. I got her flowers because I love her. But the idea is lust keeps score. So you did something bad to me, so now I get to be a jerk to you. And you'll watch people in relationships, especially if you're in high school, and you'll watch people like just play that game. Like they, well, you didn't text me first, so I'm not going to text you first. And then it's this game where it's like, you were mean to me, so I'm going to be mean back to you. But then today you were nice to me, so now I'm going to be nice to you. And it's this whole game. And listen, love doesn't need a reason. Love is always willing to give, is always willing to be humble, is always willing to take the back seat, is always willing to give. Even if it doesn't see, hey, listen, we've been off today, like it was a weird day, everybody's out of sync, things just aren't going the way we had hoped it to go, but still at the end of the day, love doesn't need a reason, and so I'm going to behave the right way, even if it doesn't seem like it's going to be reciprocated or whatever it looks like. Love, it doesn't need a reason. Jesus is, again, the example for us, and he didn't need a reason to come here and be our atoning sacrifice, the way that we could know God. It wasn't like Jesus sat around and waited for us to be good enough, and then it's like, okay, now there's our reason. That's why we'll do it now, because so-and-so finally was good enough. No, God didn't need a reason. He loved you so much, so he gave. Love doesn't need a reason. And then the third thing is love is consistent. Lust is emotional. Love is consistent. Lust is emotional. Again, the phrasing, walk in love. I love that because a walk speaks of consistency, right? For the most part, when you go for a walk, your speed stays the same. You, at least for the most part, you don't get that out of breath. It's like pretty simple. You go at a nice pace. It's easy. You're able to talk, chew bubble gum. Like, it's not that difficult. Walking is consistent. And the idea of walking in love is that it's, we're just consistent with it. We're not all over the place. We're not following our feelings. Where lust is all about feelings. I feel good today, or I feel love today, or I feel however I want to feel today. And so because of that, I'm going to act this way. And it's all based upon my feelings, where love is consistent. And we're saying, I am choosing to act loving, and I'm choosing to be loving, and I'm choosing to do the right thing, even though I don't feel it, or even though you don't deserve it, or even though all you do is take. At the end of the day, I don't need a reason, because it's not based upon my feelings. It's an action. It's a decision. It's an outlook and an attitude and something that we choose even when we don't feel. You follow me? Yeah. It's not something that has to be dependent upon how we feel or whether or not someone deserves it. So the first thing we need to understand is that about love, not lust. The second point tonight is that our love life affects all of our life. Notice in verse 3 and 4, first, he tells us to walk in love, and then he explains it, that Jesus was an offering for us. And then he says, but, and this is where he brings up the idea of lust primarily. He uses all these words, fornication, uncleanness, covetousness. He says, let it not even be named among you. He says, neither filthiness or foolish talking nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. So he brings up these ideas. He says, this is not love. Okay, these things are not love. These things are really, weak, as we've been saying, categorized as lust. It's emotional, it's feeling, it's all about me, it's all about I, it's all about what I want. But then notice that at first he's describing these things as actions. He says fornication and uncleanness and covetousness. But then in verse 5 he transitions again and he says, for this you know, that no fornicator or unclean person, nor covetous man, or an idolater, no longer is it just a behavior or an action. By verse 5, it is a characteristic of a person. So no longer is it somebody just behaving in an unclean way. Now he's saying they are an unclean person. No longer is it just somebody committing fornication. Now they are a fornicator. You see what I'm saying? All of a sudden, it goes from just something that you do, and that transitions into something that you are. All of that to say is that it is possible, and it happens, that sometimes we think that an area of our life is just that, an area of our life, and it's different, and it's hidden, and it's just this one small part. But then over time, an area of your life becomes all of your life. And so at one point, oh, it's just this one thing. I was just acting this way, or we were just doing this sometimes, or it wasn't that big of a deal, or whatever it is. And then it goes from an area of your life to being a characteristic of your life. Because especially when it comes to love and relationships and romance and this crazy concept called love, it's very easy for it to go from, oh, it's just this little thing, we're sending cute texts back and forth, or whatever it looks like, and it becomes something that is devastating and detrimental to what God has for you. Because it's gone from something that was just small and private and this little thing, and it's consumed your life, and it's become all of your life. And it's almost impossible to keep those things separate. And so what we have to do is choose from the very beginning, choose from the outset that we're going to do things God's way, and recognize that God does have a plan, and God does have a way, and God does have a design for the best and healthiest and the perfect relationship for us. But if we don't allow God to be at the center of it, and we're just like, well, here's my God life, and here's my Christian life, but then here's my love life, and here's my romantic life. And if we don't let those things mix, then pretty soon this part of our life becomes all of our life, and it's negative. And so we have to understand that it can't just be some side thing or some whatever. And I think we do that all the time. We have like our church friends, and then we have like our outside of church friends. You know, we have like the music we listen to around our parents, and then we've got the music we listen to when our parents are not in the room. And it's like we have these little like sections of our life, but pretty soon when we allow those things to take hold of our life, it goes from, oh, this is just a section of my life, and it becomes all of our life. So your love life affects all of your life. It's impossible to keep those things separate. And if we're acting inappropriately or with uncleanness, like Paul says, pretty soon we become unclean. All right, the third point is that our love life can be an example for others' lives. Our love life can be an example for others'. Now, let me just pause for a moment. And some of you are like, I don't have a love life. That's great. That's awesome. Keep Jesus first, because I'm sure a day is going to come where that will change. You know, right now you're like, I don't have time, or I don't care, or I'm not interested, or nobody else is, like, I'm super interested, they're just not interested. Whatever the case, these principles and this reality is true for most of us. Most of us, probably 98% of us, if not all of us, will probably grow up, have that one person, fall in love, get married, you know, have a Valentine forever, and that'll be our life. I mean, for most of us, that will be true. And so wherever we're at in this love life conversation, we want to make sure that we're keeping Jesus first and doing it his way so that we set ourselves up for success. You don't want to go into relationships with tons of baggage and a bunch of failure and a bunch of failed relationships prior to the one that God ultimately had for you. And so when we do things God's way, we're able to be the people and be the example that God wants us to be. So love life can be an example for others' lives. This whole text stems from this idea of being imitators of God as dear children. He says, be imitators of God as dear children. We all know kids like to copy the people they look up to, right? I'm sure you've had that little sibling that's done that thing. You're like, why are you dressed exactly like me? Or like, since when did you start using that word? Or like, you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, it's like, how did you, why are you, like, what's going on? And children, they like to imitate. They look up to people, and then they want to behave that way. And so Paul tells us, he says, that picture that child imitating their big sibling or their parent or whatever. And he says, that now is how you are to imitate God. That you are to look at God and do what he's doing. Behave like him, act like him, look up to him. And Paul tells us to walk with God like that. Closely walking and watching what he does. In order to imitate God, we need to know God, right? You can't imitate him if you don't know what he's like. Because you could be behaving some way, and somebody's like, what are you doing? And you're like, I'm imitating God. And you're like, how are you imitating God? Well, this is my idea of God. This might be how he behaves, and so this is how I'm behaving. It doesn't work like that. It's a figment of your imagination. The only way to imitate God is to know God and to know what he's like, and then do what he's doing, right? If you decide this is how God behaves, you're like, oh, that's a really poor representation of God. And so we imitate God by first knowing God. And primarily we know God through his word, through being in fellowship with other believers, through worship, through prayer. We can know God. And you can't imitate what you don't know. But as you imitate Christ, and it isn't a fake imitation. It's not being an imposter or an impersonator. That's not the word he uses. It doesn't say impersonate Christ, because at least when I hear the word impersonation, it's like an imposter. You know what I mean? It's like that person's not really like that, but they're impersonating. So it's like they're around this person and they're impersonating this, and then they go home and they take the mask off and they're somebody else. It's not like we just put on a mask and we impersonate Christ. Like, look at me, I'm a good Christian person. And then we go home and then we're like, that's not actually me at all. The idea of imitation, it's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. It's something that affects us on the inside, and we're becoming like Christ. And listen, when you imitate God, when you walk in love as he calls us to, people see Jesus in your life. Paul would tell us in another text, the same writer here, he would write us in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, he says this, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Which is such a heavy claim. Like, here Paul is, and he is saying that if you decide to do what I'm doing, you're going to be doing what Christ is doing. Why? Because I'm imitating Christ. So imitate me as I imitate Christ. Now, we got to ask ourselves, could we make that statement? Could we say to, you know, maybe when we break up into groups, you say to somebody in your group, hey, listen, this week, imitate me, and you'll be imitating Christ. Everything I do, everything I say, everything I listen to, everything I watch, how I interact with friends, how I listen to my parents, how do I interact with my boss, whatever it is, you imitate me and you'll be imitating Christ. That's a pretty heavy statement. And Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And then the challenge for us is to say, first, am I imitating Christ? And then secondly, if I'm imitating Christ, am I allowing people to see that so that people can see Jesus through my life? It's Paul would write in another text that your life is a living epistle. The word epistle is the letters. The book of Ephesians is an epistle. It's a letter written to the church. That your life is a living epistle. That people can look at your life, they can read your life, and they can see Jesus. And the way you do romance, and the way you do relationships, and the way you do life allows people to see Jesus in your life. And when you love as God loves, not like the world or culture loves, it actually makes people see Jesus. When people look at your relationships, romantic or regular relationships, do they see Jesus? That's the question I think we want to consider as we conclude our Valentines together. And just this reality where, because it's not just about today, and it's not just about what today means. It's about how can, when I live my life, do people actually see something different or significant or special about it? Imitate me, Paul says, as I imitate Christ. And we want to live in such a way that people can look at our lives and they see something different or special or even strange at times through our life. I remember a few years back, my friend was getting married, and he was getting married at 19. And I was the best man in his wedding. We were friends growing up, and I remember that the day of his wedding, we're all in our suits, and we were hungry, and we went to a Subway nearby where the wedding venue was, and we're in line in Subway, and the person there was like, "Oh, what's going on?" And they're like, "Is it prom?" And we're like, "No. He's getting married." And she's like, "Oh, which one?" And it was my buddy, and he's getting married. And she's like, "What? How old is he?" And like, he was kind of like baby-faced at the time too. And she's like, "How old is he?" And we're like, "Oh, he's 19. She's like, "That's too young to get married." She's like, "That's ridiculous." And she was like almost offended, like she's making our foot long. And she was like almost offended that he was getting married so young. And you know, we're like, "Oh no, they're in love." And because she even, I remember, this is the funny part. She's like, "You're getting married?" And we're like, "Yeah." She's like, "Is she pregnant?" And we're like, "No." They're like, "Are you like terminally ill? Like, what's going on?" And we're like, "Oh no, they're just in love. They don't want to wait. You know, they're excited. They love each other. There's no reason for them to wait any longer." And the lady just was like, couldn't wrap her head around it. You know what I mean? Like, why would you do that? And there's something about when you commit yourself to Jesus and when you're saying, "I'm going to do things God's way," that causes people to scratch their heads a little bit. It's like, "Huh? You're doing what? Like, why are you doing this with your life? Why are you living this way? Why aren't you going to this party? Or why aren't you behaving like this with that girl?" Or whatever it is. And people are going to be like, what's going on? But then what happens is, I believe that those strange encounters that happen with Christians, you know what I'm talking about? Where like people are like, "Why?" I think it sticks with people. I don't know. I never went back to that Subway, so I couldn't ask her. But I've got to imagine that the people that, because Shane, he dealt with the same thing. Shane and Julianne, they got married at how old? 19, 20. So, and they've dealt with the same thing. Shane at his work at the barbershop all the time. People are like, "You did what?" Like, "You're crazy." But I got to imagine that it sticks with people because it's different. It's breaking a cycle that is broken already. The culture and what culture says is love and how they behave and the cycle that they're in, it is a broken cycle. It's not satisfying. It isn't working. People aren't happy. Divorce rates are at an all-time high. People are miserable. Like, that's a reality. And they're doing it the way that they think they should do it. And then you've got people like Shane or my friend that are saying, "No, I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to do things God's way." And it sticks with people People see something different. So listen, all that to say, your life and the way you love people can be an example for other people's lives.
You've been listening to Middle Ground Radio with Pastor Nate Gallagher. Thanks for tuning in. We pray that this message has brought you closer in your relationship with Christ. If you'd like to hear more of Pastor Nate's teaching, check us out online at middlegroundradio.com. And if you'd like to keep up with all that's going on, follow us on Instagram at Middle Ground Radio. Be blessed, and we hope to see you next time here on Middle Ground Radio.